From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
We're going in a good trajectory. You know, I'm excited, frankly, about the fact that between the Biden administration's increase in the number of doses and our build-out of all of these facilities to deliver those doses, you're seeing the effect of that.
It's an indicator that this administration really is listening to the governors and understanding that there aren't enough vaccine doses for people who need them and want them right now. I think it would be irresponsible, in fact, to set a date and tell you that that is when everybody is going to be vaccinated, because until we see what vaccine production and deliveries will look like, it's impossible to predict.
Governor J.B. Pritzker has spent a lot of time in recent days defending Illinois' rollout of the coronavirus vaccine. Some are saying it's taking too long. Even getting appointments is quite difficult. As Illinois marked the one-year anniversary of its first COVID-19 case, we'll discuss where things stand in the battle against the virus. And the pandemic also resulted in a drop in state revenue, but was it as bad as many expected? We'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois Government and Politics reporter. And joining us today, Mary Hansen, also a reporter for NPR Illinois. And Mary, thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And Mary, I'll start with you. There's been a lot of criticism over the vaccine rollout. Some, I think, if you go back a month or so, a lot of people thought that the expectation would be we're well on our way to fully reopening the economy, getting a large number of people vaccinated by now, but it's been slower than expected. So kind of where is Illinois in all of this process?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, it depends on who you ask. Some of the Republican state leaders this week being really critical of the governor, pointing to a New York Times analysis that put Illinois, you know, somewhere near the bottom as compared to other states in where we are in administering vaccine doses. Governor Pritzker responding back that that's sort of not necessarily a fair analysis, trying to, you know, he's placing some of the blame on Walgreens and CVS, you know, for their rollout of vaccine in nursing homes. That's through a federal contract with the federal government. And, you know, he's been saying that they've been slow, but Walgreens and CVS have said it's actually the state that, you know, set the rules. I think Hannah's done a little bit more reporting on that to, and she can speak to that. But yeah, just sort of some disagreement on where we are. And I think, you know, as people at the county level and at the state level will tell you, you know, the federal government is really and the manufacturers are really the, you know, sort of what's slowing us down here. They're not many places aren't making appointments until they have actually the vaccine allotment. And then those appointments are going really fast. So, you know, just saying once we get more vaccine, we'll be able to ramp up. But that's really the bottleneck at this point.
So it's kind of supply and demand. And Hannah, just was talking about there, as Mary mentioned, the CVS, Walgreens kind of getting this almost being criticized a little bit by the governor over this program to vaccinate elderly people. That was kind of surprising, too, because isn't that the group that we want to get the vaccine to the most? And if these places can help do it, why not?
Well, so this is a federal partnership that was set up in the fall under the Trump administration. And CVS and Walgreens are supposed to push into, you know, long-term care facilities. And, you know, this is... Pritzker is far from the only governor who has been criticizing this program over its slow rollout. But at least in Illinois' case, the pharmacies say, well, hey, you don't really have much of a leg to stand on because there are two broad categories of long-term care facilities. One is skilled nursing facilities, what you traditionally think of as a nursing home, and then the other is assisted living facilities, more of a retirement home. And so on December 28th, the pharmacies started pushing into those skilled nursing facilities, but the state didn't set their quote-unquote activation date for the assisted living facilities until January 25th, a full almost month after they started in the SNFs. So it's still like there is evidence that the program is rolling out slowly, not just here, but in a lot of other states too, though, of course, the pharmacies are pushing back on that. But in, you know, the case of Illinois, like Illinois and Wisconsin are the only two states that chose activation dates for their assisted living facilities so late in the game. And so the pharmacies have that to push back on. But, you know, this is just, it's frustrating for obviously everyone, but, you know, for the families and for the residents in those long-term care facilities who, you know, they've been locked down for months and months and months. And these are the places that experienced the worst COVID outbreaks, especially early on. There's just been a lot of confusion. And so for the dose, and the other thing that the governor has complained about is that out of the federal allocation that the state gets of these vaccines, the state then has to turn around and give, you know, some of the vaccine right back so it can go to the CVS Walgreens program. And so the state can't use that vaccine. And so what some other states have started doing is kind of recouping those unused doses and, you know, using them in what's called, you know, phase 1B, the phase that we're currently in, which includes frontline essential workers like teachers and first responders and grocery store workers and corrections facility and controversially inmates, and then also folks over 65. So, you know, but I think there's been a lot of criticism and confusion about why has Illinois gotten 1.8 million doses in allocation since December, but only managed to administer a little over 800,000 in the last 6 weeks. So lots of frustration there, lots of confusion, but things are looking up a little bit. We're definitely vaccinating more people day after day, but still just, it's been confusing and chaotic, but I think we have to give it a little bit more time.
You know, Charlie, we had talked before on this program about you trying to get your own vaccine appointment, and I guess you have done that now. But it's still about, 3 weeks away before you can get in and get that done. And you're somebody who is in that category of, you know, to be at the top level of being able to get a vaccine first.
Yeah, and I'm just very glad that we were able to get set up for our vaccines. My former spouse and myself are scheduled in about mid-February. But I think part of the difficulty is, if you look at the national picture, 49 states chose to go with the program where CVS and Walgreens would take care of the nursing home and long-term care facilities. One state didn't, West Virginia. And West Virginia has I'm not sure that as of this moment, they're still the state with the best record of administering all of the vaccines that they've gotten, but not too many days ago they were, and they did not go through the big national chains. They worked with local mom and pop drug stores throughout West Virginia. And I think if you look at the statistics, the doses that came to the state government in Illinois and came to the city of Chicago, more than half of those have already been administered. The doses that were allocated to the pharmacy chains, only slightly more than 20% of those had been administered as of midweek. So I think the difficulty for the pharmacies, in some cases, they had to train additional personnel. I think looking forward, though, the fact that we're now getting the National Guard involved, the fact that it won't be too long before other medical professionals will be able to help, I think we're going to be able to catch up pretty quickly. Plus, the fact is the Biden administration has increased the number of doses that are going to be sent to Illinois, and they have also committed to telling the state 3 weeks in advance how many you're going to get, so you don't have the problem of, well, we have X number of doses. Should we give everybody their first shot, or should we only give half as many people the first shot to make sure that we have doses available for the second shot? That's an oversimplification, but it's going to be very helpful to know exactly what to expect is coming down through the federal pipeline.
Yeah, and Mary, that's something I think that the governor had talked about as well this week. He talked about that earlier notice from the federal government so they can plan accordingly. I think the governor has talked about creating more mass vaccination sites, including downstate in Illinois, but so far we're not sure where those are going to be or when those would open.
Yeah, we're not sure. I mean, just the more consistent supply hopefully will be key. I think one of the big sort of public challenges right now is people are really frustrated with the appointment system. And, you know, I mean, just here in Illinois, here in Springfield, Sangamon County released a bunch of appointments all at once on Tuesday morning. And within an hour, those were all snapped up. And now there's no timeline for when the next appointments will be available through the Sangamon County Health Department. And so I think that uncertainty and that sort of like competition is really one of the things that's making people so upset. So having a consistent supply from the federal government then filters down to the state, and the state can then tell these counties, this is how much you're going to get, you know, on a consistent basis. And then they can plan around that and be able to communicate that. So hopefully that will ease, some of the concerns right now. And then maybe it will be able to, you know, allow the state and allow some of these local health departments to set up these mass vaccination sites that we're seeing in the Chicago suburbs right now.
And Mary, you also talked to some health officials about on that same topic about why can't you make an appointment farther out? So why can't you say, the first week of March, you'll come in because we expect to have all this vaccine? They're not doing that at this point, and there are reasons that they've given for why they're not scheduling that far out.
Right, and their reasoning is, you know, we can't schedule an appointment if we don't have a dose that matches up to it, because if somebody shows up and they don't have that dose, are they going to send them away? Are they going to try to reschedule them? Those sort of like logistical challenges. And so having that consistent supply and knowing will hopefully help solve some of those and allow them to kind of roll it out on a more rolling basis, instead of dropping all of these appointments, having them be snapped up, and then just sort of turning around and saying, just keep refreshing the website and we'll kind of let you know as we can.
All right. You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler and NPR Illinois' Hannah Meisel and Mary Hansen. And Hannah, the state this week announcing, that we've moved to a point now where the high school sports are going to be allowed to resume, with some precautions put in place. But like basketball, for example, even football, they're talking about as we get into the spring. Is it a good idea, I guess, to do that at a time when we're all concerned about these different variants of the virus and the vaccine rollout is coming very slowly? It kind of seems like it could be putting the cart before the horse.
Well, I mean, I guess we'll see. It's definitely a race between vaccinations and these new, more contagious variants. But at the same time, I mean, I don't think the governor's office had a choice. They were, really pounded for putting a freeze on those. If you remember, in late November, the entire state got moved to so-called tier three mitigations. And then the governor kind of froze the whole state there, which didn't really matter for a while because all of the regions were well above the metrics for tier three. But toward the end there, around Christmas, New Year's, a couple of regions started, they would have tested out if we weren't still frozen there. And then eventually, two weeks ago, contagion period after New Year's Day, the governor unfroze those regions, and then, metrics had been just rapidly falling, and now almost every single region except for the Metro East has indoor dining now. He was pounded for freezing the state there and not, quote unquote, following his own plan. And I just don't think that he had a choice on following the science. And then also there had been tremendous pressure from the Illinois High School Sports Association and, other parent groups that have sprung up to kind of pressure the governor's office. And then he came out last Friday and said, okay, we've, changed the sports guidance around a little bit. And, things like basketball, winter sport that was placed in that high risk category can actually go ahead now. However, you know, it, depending on where you live in the state, you might not be able to have like actual competitive games. And it seems like we're not going to have any sort of state championships for almost any sport. Yeah, I mean, like I said, like, I don't think that they had much of a choice. And, you know, hopefully we ramp up vaccinations more. But, you know, experts are assuming that we're going to have another surge, not sure how bad it will be. But these, you know, these more contagious variants, I'm kind of worried that a lot of people aren't taking them more seriously. So PSA experts, Dr. Fauci, recommending that people double mask if you're not already wearing a mask with a few layers or a filter.
Well, it occurs to me that maybe part of the rationale involved was the fact that we waited out to see if there was going to be a spike over the Christmas holidays or from people traveling for Christmas and New Year's celebrations. And that did not seem to materialize. And so we've had the lowest 7-day positivity rate since early October during this week. On Wednesday, it was 4.5%. And so that's good news. Plus, we're administering more doses of vaccine. We've set record numbers in recent days, where we've been running more than 50,000 doses administered a day. And I'm pretty sure that's going to be ramped up. Before that, it was running around 35,000. So you put all those factors together, we look like we missed the surge for the holidays. More and more people are getting vaccinated. Let's go ahead and try these sports, not on a full-flowing basis. We're not going to have football championships. We're not going to have basketball champions, state champions, but we will allow practices, we will allow competition among schools. And a lot of people have argued, parents and others, that it's very important for high school athletes to be able to participate. As a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, the governor was sued in a very tragic case by the mother of a high school athlete who committed suicide. And she blamed the governor for causing her son's suicide because he was despondent about not being able to participate in sports. I mean, that's sort of an extreme case, but that's the kind of trade-offs that you have to make, particularly in a state like Illinois that is very much wrapped up in high school basketball and football.
Let's save a couple of minutes here to talk about a study that has come out from the Institute for Government and Public Affairs, the University of Illinois. We've been talking for months, recent months, about that the state's going to take this financial blow from the pandemic. It turns out, though, according to that study, it's possibly not quite as bad as we thought. And Charlie, you weren't necessarily surprised by the numbers that were included in that.
No, I wasn't. And the reason is that the study overlapped a couple fiscal years and said that the hit was going to wind up being less than $1 billion. Well, as a matter of fact, when the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability released their most recent monthly report going through December, which is the first half of FY21, they showed that the receipts that the state has taken up or has gotten so far this fiscal year were roughly $2.5 billion higher than in the prior fiscal year. And they've actually increased their revenue estimate by about roughly $2.3 billion based on their experience. Now, part of it is we borrowed money from the feds. We owe in excess of $4 billion that we borrowed, of which $1.3 billion has to be repaid by the end of this fiscal year, in other words, by June 30th. But we've used that money to pay off a lot of Medicaid bills, and for every dollar you spend on Medicaid, you get 50 cents back from the feds. So in the first 6 months of this fiscal year, the money from the feds has more than doubled. It's gone up by $1.6 billion from what it was the first 6 months of the prior fiscal year. So that's been a big help. But we're still not out of the woods, obviously, because we still have to figure out how we're going to make up for the money that we're not going to get because we didn't adopt the graduated tax amendment to the Constitution. And we're still waiting to see what kind of money the federal government might provide to help cities, counties, municipalities, states make up for revenue loss because of the pandemic.
And Hannah, we still, of course, have that structural deficit, which is, you know, stubbornly hanging around there, as it always has been for at least recent memory. So the state is not out of the woods by any stretch, and especially if things don't go as well as we hope this year.
Right. I mean, like you said, it's been decades that has brought us to this point. We're definitely, you know, it's not great. And, you know, if you remember back to December, the governor introduced about $700 million of cuts that he could make unilaterally through his executive power. Although that also included getting AFSCME to agree to some furlough days. And, you know, last I heard, I don't think that was going very well. But then, you know, he wanted to work with lawmakers to find $1.3 billion in additional cuts. But, you know, that's going to be really, really hard. I mean, we all just lived, it feels like just, you know, through the budget impasse when we all learned about how the state budget truly works and how much is actually just on autopilot because things are constitutionally mandated to be paid out, or they're, you know, governed by consent decrees or court orders. So, I mean, are there things to cut? I am sure that there are things that they could find to cut, but is it going to be like things that are massive and like, oh, wow, we just found a whole ton of waste that we didn't know about? No, that's a fantasy. And in fact, they're going to have to make a lot of hard choices, and some of them might come down to, you know, social programs, and, you know, so that's going to be, it's going to be hard, or it's going to mean perhaps layoffs, although that's all always complicated with the unions. But yeah, it's not a pretty picture, and lawmakers have a lot to do, you know, when they come back, and we will see how well they play, how nicely they play with Governor Pritzker's office, because it's been a while since they've had to work together, since the governor's been kind of going it alone on his COVID approach for nearly a year.
Mary, we're talking
and,
about...
And let me add one other thing about kind of a bright spot for Illinois fiscally. Every day the comptroller's office puts out a report of how big is our bill backlog. Well, Friday morning, the bill backlog was $4.8 billion, and it's been below $5 billion for the last couple of days, and that's the lowest that it's been in more than 5 years. And part of it, of course, is that we have borrowed money to help pay off the bills, and I said earlier, we pay off Medicaid bills and we get money back from the feds. But that's moving in the right direction, so we'll see.
Mary, we're talking about state government there, but when it comes to local government, from what you're seeing at least, a lot of local government seem to also be doing better than I think people would have expected.
Yeah, I mean, I think at least for Springfield, they you know, unveiled their budget plan for the coming fiscal year. They have a March 1 start to the fiscal year. Similarly to the state, they had been projecting losses of, I think at one point it was as high as 16% for revenue. It looks like in the numbers that they just released that, you know, for major revenue sources like sales tax, it's actually going to be about 5% compared to what they had budgeted for. And they're still, you know, projecting or budgeting for a slight increase in sales tax and in other revenues. But at the same time, similar to the state, I mean, pension costs are huge. And I think the city's budget director this week said that their police and fire pension payments, not the liability, but what the city actually has to pay each year, increased by the biggest amount this year that he's seen in years. So, you know, similar, you know, competing concerns and maybe just a little bit of good news.
And if there is money that comes from the federal government, and we've been hearing that possibility, a stimulus package that the state could benefit from as well, that some of that money would also go to local governments. Are they factoring that type of thing in?
I mean, I think that they definitely are hoping for that. I mean, I think similar to the state, they're looking at, you know, trying to get every penny that they can so that they can continue, you know, the level of services that they have.
All right. Let's go now to our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's start with you.
Well, the future for the Thompson Center in Chicago is looking ever more dim. And that's because the state announced this week that we've purchased a 17-story office building in the West Loop of Chicago for slightly more than $73 million. And the governor has said that the building will pay for itself because we are terminating what he called a patchwork of expensive downtown leases. And the downtown leases run more than $20 million a year. So if you do the simple math, after 4 years, we will have recouped the $73 million that we paid to get the former Pepsi Cola building in Chicago. And moving, we're going to start in April, moving people out of the Thompson Center and out of some of the other rented space and into this new office building.
Mary?
Sure. So I think we've heard of a few you know, resignations on the from the legislature. One state senator, Andy Menar, announced his resignation recently, and the Democratic group that is looking to appoint somebody to replace him released their names of 8 finalists for that appointment. You know, several of them from Springfield, Alderwoman Doris Turner, who's also the chair of the Democratic Party, former Alderman Frank McNeil, Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf is also on the list, as well as a Macoupin County Board member. So it'll be interesting to see in the coming weeks, you know, who is picked for that seat. And then if there's sort of, you know, a cascading appointment of, you know, if the person is elected, if they need to appoint somebody to their former elected position. So that'll be interesting to watch.
All right. And Hannah?
So it's, you know, the legislature was in town in early mid-January for their lame duck session, but it's been kind of a question mark when they would come back because, you know, there was a COVID scare at the big Bank of Springfield Convention Center that the House rented out. But it looks like now the House will return one day on February 10th just to pass rules that will allow them to meet, allow committees to meet remotely. And then, you know, see what happens in March. But the other thing here is, you know, there's been a small but, you know, kind of vocal group of lawmakers who feel like, well, you know, for the continuity of government, we should get vaccinated. I mean, Congress got vaccinated, I think, in December. They haven't, the governor has not really heeded that call at all. But Chicago City Council gets to be vaccinated because under, you know, the city's rules of phase 1B, city elected officials get to be vaccinated, but not state lawmakers and not county officials.
All right, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Mary Hansen with NPR Illinois. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. Production assistance for the program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.